Hey, this is Danny from The Most High Show, and Christian has trusted me all by myself today, so none of us know what's going to happen, so let's see. Today, I am here with Barty. That is a very interesting name, by the way. And we are hanging out in his workshop. If you could see, it's amazing, and I'm very jealous, and looking at all the tools. And he does some amazing things, so we're going to be chatting with him today and getting to know him a little bit. So, hey, Barty, welcome.
Huh, how are you?
Good. That sounded really cheesy when I said, hey, Barty. I'm working on not being cheesy in front of you, camera. So tell us a little bit, in 2 minutes, your story.
My story in 2 minutes. I'm a preacher's kid. I have an unusual name, Barty, and I think I've tried to live up to it too much in my life. I started drinking in high school, and I liked it. I liked the way it made me feel, or I liked the way it didn't make me feel at all. That went on for a lot of years. I'm a preacher's kid, so we get pregnant at 19. I therefore have a 48-year-old daughter. And went to school, had another child. Continual history of every time I had alcohol, and I wasn't old enough to buy it when I first got married, which was odd. It just went on. And more alcohol. I finally graduated from George State University and became an adult. And I thought, oh boy, I can do whatever I want to do now. And I did. Fell in with some people, and these weren't bad people. These were people in the corporation where I worked. And we did more pot and more alcohol, and I did exactly what I wanted to do for too many years. 1983, on a Monday morning, I woke up and God told me I was finished. I wasn't finished, but he decided I'd had enough. I was drinking a quarter of alcohol a day, crystal meth, cocaine, acid, pretty much anything I could get my hands on. And I quit cold turkey on that day. I went to an AA meeting that night. Went to 1,000 AA meetings after that, pretty much every night. I drank every day, so I went to a meeting every night. And I was blessed. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know what the steps were. I just found, I guess I found a new addiction, is sometimes what I call it. I'm pretty obsessive about everything I do, as you can look around this room and tell people.
I've never seen tools so organized and so clean.
I have ADD and OCD both. Okay. So it's really a challenge some days. Okay. But this is a happy place for me now. It's been 33 years. It's been quite a journey.
Tell us!
I don't know. I'm telling the truth.
We're not just people who buy drugs from the store. Is that who you are? Tell us!
911.
I am new. Actually, I've never looked up the 12 steps until today, because when Christian told me that I would be getting to talk to you today, I wanted to find out some stuff. And so I was looking over the 12 steps. And so for those of us who, everyone who's watching who's not like me, I mean, who is like me, who doesn't know what the steps are, can you let us know what the different steps are?
Sure. Well, first of all, we call you civilians.
Oh, I'm a civilian.
We laugh about it in AA meetings and now in Celebrate Recovery meetings where I attend recovery. Everybody just looks at us and says, well, why don't you just stop? Why don't you just stop what you're doing? And there's all kinds of addictions.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of a mystery still to me. People look at alcoholism and they say it's a disease. They say it's an addiction. They say this and that. All I know is I can't drink.
Yeah.
That Monday morning when I woke up, and I now know that it was a God thing. I didn't then. I went to a meeting, I took the first step, which is just simply saying, I'm broken. Okay. I give up. I can't do it anymore. And that's one of the hardest things people have to do, is to take that first step. And the best way to look at the steps, there's 12 of them. We laugh all the time in recovery meetings and say, you really should work them in order, because people will go in and they'll start getting a little bit of sobriety, and they're sober for a couple of weeks, and they start doing all these things. They want to say, I'm sorry to everybody, and they have no basis to do it.
They haven't dealt with the issues that are the underlying issues.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the way that I always try to explain the steps to people is the first three go together.
Okay.
And that says, I got a problem. I'm willing to turn my life. I'm willing to say, God can help me.
Okay.
Okay? Or in AA world, a higher power can help you, okay? Because they do not, they describe it as a God of your understanding.
Yes.
Today for me, it's a capital G God. I'm a Christian, and that's my beliefs, and that's the way my whole spiritual basis is there. So, and I told this to Christian just the other day, and he had never heard it. And so the first three steps is, I can't, he can, I think I'll let him.
Okay.
I can't, says, I can't live my life this way anymore.
Yeah.
He can, and that's recognizing that there is a power greater than us.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. All of my best thinking got me to a folding chair and a bad cup of coffee.
Yeah.
In an AA meeting. And I think our letting is turning your life and your will over the care of God. Literally saying, I can't do this anymore.
Surrender. Yeah.
So those are the first three steps.
Okay.
And they can happen pretty quickly. The problem is the third step we end up doing over and over and over again. Because you turn it over to God and you say, I'm going to take it back today.
Oh, so many times. I will lay it at the cross. I'm like, I'm done. And then I'm like, but I miss it so much.
That's right.
And it's so pretty.
That's right. So, that's the first three.
Yeah.
And I work with guys. I sponsor some guys after 30 years. I finally was able to sponsor some men. And that's the hardest thing for them to figure out, is how do you turn your life and will over to the care of God. And the understanding of God takes, for me, years to come to. So you get there, and you finally start getting some sobriety. You get the drugs and alcohol out of your system. We call it a pink cloud, the first 30 days. Because there's so many people that I had not been sober for 30 days in 10 years when I got sober. And you start going to enough meetings, and you hear all the good things that are said, and you hear pretty much the same thing. But what I always worked at, and every time I went to an AA meeting, and when you go to one every day, you kind of see the same people all the time, is I looked for one thing that someone would say that I could grab to.
Okay. Like one little nugget of truth? Or
more one little thing that would nudge my brain a different way.
Okay.
I'm real channeled in my life, and a lot of addicts are. We see things one way.
Yeah.
We get something in our head, we leave it there.
Yeah.
And the meeting specifically, really for you to hear what other people are saying and say, oh, wait a minute, I'd forgotten about something.
Yeah. Can be boiled down to, I can't, he can, I think I'll let him.
Exactly.
So then what's the grouping of the next one?
The next part is a long, long process, and it took me probably 7 years and to be truthful. The next step is the fourth step, and if anybody in recovery is watching this, they're all going to say, yeah, the dreaded fourth step.
Okay.
You write down everything that you've ever done to anyone.
Okay.
That you really hurt about, and you write down everything that everyone's done to you.
So it's like a nodal history. In my counseling class, that's what we called it. I didn't have a computer at the time, so I was 32 at the time, and so I had 32 notepads, and I wrote a year of every time in my every year of my life, and then I went back in every memory, what happened to me, who did it, and how did it make me feel. So kind of like that.
That's not kind of, that's pretty much what, there's a form, supposedly.
Yes. Okay.
And today's age, we end up doing them on spreadsheets.
I wish I would. Everyone else in my class did.
It's easier. But literally, you sit down, and the problem with that is that so many of us are so guilty because we did so many bad things to people, is it's really hard for us to identify what was done to us.
Yeah.
We know what we did to other people.
Yeah.
So that's what the fourth step is, and it's a long mess.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a mess.
A lot of people, and I'll interject, because I think, I've never been through AA, but I'm a firm believer we all have addictions and we all have coping mechanisms. So your coping mechanism was alcohol and drugs. Mine is food, TV, and staying busy. And I have and a million other things. And so I think there's so many times until you hit rock bottom, most of us aren't going to sit and look at any of our vices or any of our coping mechanisms. Mm-hmm. Because to sit there and, you know, I love that you have step four, because I mean, I sit with a lot of my friends and I lead a couple of small groups, and going through and talking about, you need to, because I'm a firm believer in whatever we do, you know, your reactions and you abuse the drug and the alcohol because it's how you knew how to handle things, because all the crap that had happened to you before. And so it's so important to realize, and it's beautiful, and especially as followers of, for those of us who are followers of Christ, mm-hmm. to see the root of our pain, but it sucks in the process. So I know for me, I cried 6 months. Like, I literally just sat on my friend's back porch and cried when I was going through all of this.
It's tough.
Yeah, it is.
It brings up things that you don't know are there.
Yeah.
I've actually done, we call it working the 12 steps, is the process we go through. The program I'm in now is called Celebrate Recovery. We deal, you'll love this, with all hurts, habits, and hang-ups.
Yes, I'm familiar. I have a friend who used to work with Celebrate Recovery.
So this is one of the step books.
Okay.
So I've actually worked the 12 steps 5 times.
Okay.
And you just keep peeling the onion.
Oh, right? Yeah. Like Shrek said, for those of us who watch Shrek, I think everyone has seen it, but it's layers. It's the onion.
It's
Donkey
the onion.
Tried to say that we're a parfait because everyone loves a parfait, but we're not. We're onions.
So that's the fourth step. And then the fifth step is equally as hard. It's the old adage, you're only as sick as your secrets.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, you take your fourth step and you read it to your sponsor.
Okay.
And a sponsor is someone that you have chosen in your life, and typically male, female, female with female, that you will allow to tell you when you're messing up.
Okay.
In recovery, I never have the right to point my finger at you and say, you did da 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 da.
Mm-hmm.
It's I or me statements. It's never you or we.
Okay.
Taking
ownership.
Except for your sponsor. Because you give that person permission to intervene in your life.
Okay.
To say, you are messing up.
Okay.
Or you need to be doing this.
Okay.
But you listen and you grow together, really. So the fifth step is you do that.
Okay.
The next step after that is you take that list and you say, I need to say I'm sorry. We call it making amends.
That's what I've heard of, because there's a lot of movies and TVs that happens on.
We want to say, that's a very, very hard process.
Yeah.
I have a funny rule. I call it the butt rule.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to apologize to someone and you're saying, I'm sorry, but underneath your breath, but you really were wrong.
Yeah.
Okay. You can't use the butt rule.
Yeah.
So making amends is, it's a lot of that.
Yeah.
You're not doing this to make yourself feel good. It's kind of you got to keep the feeling out of it. You're not doing this, you know, a lot of people you make amends to, they're still pissed off at you.
Yeah.
You know, they're still angry.
Yeah.
So you got to be prepared to say, they're not going to accept it.
Yeah.
And it's really, really tough. So you really have got to have some recovery in you, and you need to be talking to a sponsor, and you need to have someone that's done this a lot.
Yeah.
To say, I'm gonna go make amends to you, and you know, this is what I'm gonna say.
Mm-hmm.
I made an amends to my first wife, who I was married to for 14 years, and she divorced me rightly. And I made an amends to her 12 years after I got sober.
Okay.
It was not until 1 year ago that I finally understood why she did what she did in our marriage that caused us to break up. And I went back to her nearly a year ago now at my granddaughter's birthday, and I talked with her.
Hmm.
And I finally said, I understand that we got married at 19. You never had your 20s into 30s.
Yeah.
She never got to make a decision about what she wanted in life. It was handed to her, and that was it.
Yeah.
So she went out and found her own life.
Yeah.
And we were married, which doesn't work out real well. But I finally said to her, I understand why and how.
Yeah.
And it made a huge, huge difference.
That's awesome.
But that's the making amends part.
And well, I think there has to be wisdom with it too. When I was looking online, I forget how they phrase it, but you only bring something up to someone if it's going to help the situation. Because I've been the recipient of someone trying to make amends with me, and I didn't even know they were mad at me. And it jacked me up for a couple of weeks, because this person came up to me and they were like, "I just want to let you know I forgave you." And it was in a time when I had a lot of other stuff going on, and I'm thinking, the heck did I ever do to you? Like, I have been over backwards, I have been nice, and they never even told me what I did. They just proceeded to tell me that they had hatred for me in their heart and all these kind of things. And I mean, it took me a while to forgive them. Of course, I never told them, because that wouldn't have helped them. But it can cause as much damage as the first offense. So I like that there's, you know, the wisdom of that. You know, when we make amends, we need to make sure we're doing it for the right reason.
I'm going to stop. I have the book here.
Okay.
So I want to
read how they.
We may direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others.
Yeah.
That's the one you're referring
yes,
to.
Yes. Such what? Wisdom.
It kind of sounds like what happened to you is an amends that wasn't made very well.
Yeah.
That wasn't well formulated.
Yeah.
And it's a real tricky process.
Well, and that wasn't even needed.
Well, that's the other thing.
I mean.
And so what happens with the sponsorship is that when you really make amends, you work this back and forth with your sponsor.
Yeah.
And your sponsor hopefully has the wisdom, and you chose them because they have some wisdom
to help you hash it out.
To ask you questions.
Yeah.
Say, well, what do you mean by that?
Yeah.
Whatever. And it's a psychology thing. I mean, it's a.
Yeah.
It's a process.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, there are things I will never say to my daughter.
Yeah.
Because it would bring up stuff that she's having to deal with, that what I'm going to do is going to hurt her.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hope she never resents this. You can cut that out.
You will X that part out.
There are certain people that... There are certain situations with family and whatever that you can try to make an amends, and they're still dealing with the hurt.
Yeah.
And you're not going to help them or yourself by just going in and crashing like a bull in a china shop.
Yeah.
Because that's what it feels like sometimes when you hear about amends gone wrong. I guess there could be a movie like that. sounds like it. But... It's a process. It's very, and like I say with my wife, I did it wrong the first time. It
yeah.
was good.
It was the best you could do at
it's
the time.
It's the best I could do. But you do a lot of understanding. So that's the process that you go through. That's the
yeah.
middle process. You start by writing down everything wrong. You're only as sick as your secrets.
Okay.
Make a list. Work the list. Don't hurt anybody in the process.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's better to write a letter.
Yeah.
And burn it.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes you have to make amends to dead people.
Yeah.
Which is sad. So that's the middle part.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So we talked about the first three steps, and we talked about the middle section. What does the last section entail?
The last section is about living life.
Okay.
That's what we're really doing here. It's... Recovery is just a long, long training program.
Okay.
It's a retraining program. For instance, for myself, I can get angry. I can get really mean. Mm. I can get really ugly. I have a tone of voice that I take. My wife will call me down on this just hard. She said, I hurt her feelings so bad the other night, just the way I talked to someone on the phone. I get angry at people being ignorant. And it just drives me up a wall, and it's very sad. But I get very angry, and I have a tone of voice that's very, very bad. So one of the things I have trained, I mean, literally, you've got to retrain yourself.
Yeah.
In AA, we call it getting new playmates and playthings.
Okay.
You've got a new life.
Yeah.
You've got to remove yourself from where you were and figure out how to live life the way real, normal, civilian human beings live life. So I had to train myself not to be angry. I just stop.
Yeah.
I've learned to shut
So what did that include? Did that mean, because I know for me, because I used to have a temper. It was the same thing, right? I know I get the face, I get the voice, I get the eyes. Apparently my eyes can put terror in people that I had no clue. And so for me, a lot of that was finding out my triggers, right? Like, so what is it that makes me mad? So, mm-hmm. I mean, one of the easiest things, those of us who struggle with road rage, mine has come a very long way. But I remember when, I don't know how it happened, but realizing I'm not pissed at the person who cut me off because they cut me off, because I feel disrespected, right? So it's not the fact that they made the mistake, it's getting to the root. So whenever I can feel the rage, I mean, my neck gets hot, and whenever I feel it, to take a step back and be like, okay, first of all, they probably weren't trying to hurt you. Like, I mean, it was nothing personal. I actually almost got in an accident on the way here. And it would have been pretty nasty because a woman would have turned right into my door. But it's a hard corner. She had kids in the car. And you could just see, I put my horn on. We almost hit each other. And you could see the look of terror in her face. I'm like, no worries. It's okay. Like, because we all make mistakes. Where if that would have happened to me years ago, she would not have gotten that. So realizing, for me, what are my triggers? So when I have my rage, so has that been helpful? Is that part of the process?
It's identifying, as you call them, triggers. What's the hurtful things you do? I mean, and how do you? I mean, you just, for me, it's anger, and for me, it's allowing other people their space and you know, living without hurting people.
Yeah.
So the last three steps is we continue to take a personal inventory when we were wrong, promptly admitted it.
Okay.
Don't let things fester day to day.
Yeah.
If you're wrong, figure out, and when I make an apology to someone, I have an absolute rule that I will figure out exactly what I did that I'm saying I'm sorry for, and I leave the butt out.
Yeah.
I've got to get it to the point.
There's no
so
butt.
Sometimes I make a really weird apology.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the only sincere one, but it makes me think through it.
Yeah. Well, and I like, that's something I think is really important. I actually, I just wrote a book that'll be coming out soon, and that, the picture, it's about living wholehearted and allowing God to heal the wounds of our heart. Mm-hmm. And the picture God gave me when I started my journey was our hearts, before we even enter the world, our hearts get wounded, right? We our parents are sinful, there are things that we're taking on, we enter a sinful world, and so from before birth, we're getting wounded. Well, how many of us actually learn how to deal with the wounds? Most of us just slap a band-aid on it and go about life. And so I found myself in my 30s, I was walking around with a heart that had been wounded for 30-something years and full of band-aids that were pussy, that were infected, that were nasty. And so like the process, and it's kind of like the middle section, the image God gave for me, which is the middle section of these steps, is it's as if God is, from a spiritual standpoint, removing each bandage, lancing each wound, and having to drain the toxin. You know, that's the internal looks at ourselves. And so that's where the step of continuing to make amends, because you don't want to just smack a band-aid on it. Because mm-hmm. if things happen and you just smack a band-aid on it and you don't deal with it, it's going to fester, it's going to get worse, and you're going to find yourself back where you were before, or God forbid, even worse. So I love that step. I mean, they're all great and everything, but that might be my favorite.
Well, it's 11 says we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God, praying, knowing for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Constant contact with God.
Yeah.
Every day.
Yeah.
It's just that He's in charge. We're here. That's just, you got to learn to worship Him, and to me, that's service.
Yeah.
And I love the last, because I said it so many times, having had a spiritual experience as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to others and to practice these principles in all our affairs. That's giving. You can't keep it unless you give it away.
Yeah.
And it's the same service thing. It's doing this to carry the message to others.
Yeah.
There is relief out there. It's not normal to drink a quarter of vodka every night. It's not normal to look at pornography every day of your life. It's not normal to eat a whole cake every day. These things, we know it's not. And the interesting thing you said a little while ago, drugs and alcohol will kill you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm very, very lucky I'm alive today. The others, the soft things, don't kill you. They don't hurt as much physically.
They don't kill you as quickly.
but there's no compelling reason. I mean, I was going to die.
Yeah.
Because of the drugs and alcohol
yeah.
I was doing. Eating takes a lot longer.
It does.
Anger, people don't even realize the damage anger does.
Yeah.
I mean, those kinds of what I call soft addictions.
Yeah.
And they're certainly not soft for the people that have them.
Yeah.
But the soft addictions are the ones that really, and this is the reason Celebrate Recovery was so amazing, hurts, habits, and hang-ups.
Yeah.
We don't differentiate.
Yeah, we were talking before about how Celebrate Recovery is an amazing program because it talks about, you know, what you call the soft addictions.
Mm-hmm.
And do you ever listen to Brene Brown? Have you ever heard of Brene Brown? She's one of my, she saved my life in a lot of ways. She is a shame and vulnerability researcher. She's also a social worker and psychologist. And she was, in her story, she talks about when she was in college, she walked into an AA meeting. Because at the time she was a what quote unquote typical college student where she drank to overcome, you know, awkwardness at parties and stuff, and she smoked and she went through all the typical stages, but she knew there was a problem. And so she walked in and basically they wouldn't let her in the AA meeting. They're like, you know, you don't drink enough to be here. But someone pulled her aside and they were like, you need to quit drinking, you need to quit smoking, and you need to start eating healthy, because they saw all of these coping mechanisms in life. And that's one thing that if I have a voice and a story, it's the fact that we run to addictions. And I mean, we run to what I call coping mechanisms. And for those of us who are followers in Christ, you know, he's the one we're supposed to go to. So like I was saying before, finding out my triggers and finding out when I'm uncomfortable, what do I do? And that for me, because eating was one of my big, I'm down quite a bit of weight, and so food was my main thing, which it was interesting you said, you know, the food won't kill you, but looking at America, right, we are the most medicated, obese group of America ever.
Yeah, we are.
And actually my story is I was overweight. I was 220 pounds, and I was hanging about with a bunch of other overweight Christians, and they were talking about people who were sinning in with alcohol and more other things, pointing their finger, and I'm looking around at us, and I'm like, okay, but we just went to McDonald's, and I just had a Big Mac and all of this stuff, and realizing the hypocrisy of
exactly.
food within the Christian community. You know, that may not be a topic for this discussion, but how there's those things and busyness in our culture. I mean, I'm a nanny, and even working with the kids, I see so many people whose their kids have no time to breathe. Mm-hmm. The mom I work for, she's amazing, and we were talking about the summer where we stay busy, but we're at the park, we're at the pool, we're playing, we're having downtime, where in our culture, that's just not a, we just stay so busy, we don't have to deal with our stuff.
I've got to tell you a quick story, if I may. AA is a community, and what happens is you get in there and you find out you're not terminally unique.
Yeah.
There's a lot of other people.
Me
just,
too.
That just like there.
Yes, the power
and,
of
and,
me
and
too.
Once you, and then you see these people changing. My younger daughter said to her mom, and I heard this from her mom, that after going to that meeting, she said, I had no idea how this worked. These people keep each other sober.
Yeah.
And her mother, who goes to Al-Anon, which is another 12-step program. So, yeah, Chrissy, that's how it works.
Yeah.
Because we're all alike, and we're all there for each other, and it's a safe place to be.
Yeah.
And it's a place that we can be ourselves, and that we're not unique.
Yeah.
And that we can grow. It's very common for people after about 7 years of AA to go back to church. Because there's something more to life. Something was driving you
yeah.
to that drink, always. And so you've got to keep trying to figure those things out. And this is kind of what you said in your life, is that once you got into this, you said, you know, you cried for days and days
yeah.
because all this pain came out.
Yeah.
And you didn't have a mechanism where people could sit around you. It's very funny in Celebrate Recovery, when you're talking in a group meeting, mm-hmm. and I would not be in your meeting because we're women and women, men and men.
Okay.
We don't mix because it just doesn't work.
That's wise.
Period. If you started crying in a Celebrate Recovery meeting, people would not even hand you a Kleenex.
Just let you.
Because it's between you and God.
Yeah.
We're interfering with that communication.
Okay.
But they all will love you and support you and know, and you know that.
Yeah.
And you know what is ever said in that room won't ever go outside that room.
That's amazing.
But it's the whole recovery process. It to me is walking with God, serving God, learning to love God, because if you don't learn to love God, you'll never be able to love yourself.
Yeah.
And therefore you'll never be able to love another human being. And this is where we fail all the time.